What is a photograph? For me, a fragment of quicksilver, a lucid dream, a scribbled note from the subconscious to be deciphered, perhaps over years.
It is a monologue trying to become a conversation, an offering, an alibi, a salute.
Hey, welcome to the Street Shots Photography Podcast. This is Antonio.
And this is Ward.
And this is episode 205 for the Ides of April.
We have to drop the Ides.
Middle of April, 2023. I dropped the Ides. Well, but it's tax day, too.
Oh, tax day for you. Ours is the end of April.
Yeah, but we're a bigger country.
So. Yeah, but you're a big country. <That's just> like, the sooner you get it done, the better.
You know what? I didn't get mine done on time or sent on time, so I have to file an extension. Not that it's a big deal, but, you know, it's maybe I got to pay a little bit more or something like that. But we get to extend for 6 months till October. So I just have to have an appointment with my accountant to find out, like, what am I doing these days? Because I don't feel like I'm in business anymore. So, you know, I'm just doing freelance work. So there you go. How are you?
I'm doing well. Weather's warmed up here. It was sunny. Saw walking the dog after work today. It was all very nice.
Yeah, you sent that video.
Yeah.
You guys, with the vertical videos already.
Well, it's the
you're being like the young people with the vertical videos.
That and my Darth Vader breathing you can hear on that video.
Yeah, I heard the Darth Vader breathing.
Not cool.
Well, we're hitting spring, but and the pollen is getting out there, and I started sneezing, and it's always a wonderful experience.
Springtime.
Yeah. And, you know, if we were in the Middle Ages, New York City, it would have been really interesting because we had an earthquake and an eclipse within 4 days of each other.
Sounds like the end times to me.
It was certainly times. That earthquake scared the out of me. Because, yes, and for anybody who's living on the West Coast or lives in earthquakes, yeah, to you, you know, if you're living in New York, this does not happen that often. And in fact, it was apparent. Well, it wasn't in New York City that it happened. It was in New Jersey, and it was, I think, the fourth most intense earthquake in recorded times in our area. So it was pretty bad. I mean, I guess it was like a 4.8 in New Jersey. I don't know what that means for the rest of us, you know, in the zone. Mm-hmm. It's certainly not that intense, but it was enough to, like, my building, and you've been in this building, and I live on the 12th floor, and so I've been in an earthquake here before too, and I think it was 2011, I think we had an earthquake here. The building was jumping up and down.
Wow.
It wasn't swaying. Well, and it also started swaying because I'm on the 12th floor. So it's almost like, you know, like a tree. It's whipping at the top.
Yeah.
And, you know, this building was built in 1962 in New York. They didn't design it for earthquakes. So, I mean, there was no damage, but things were moving around a lot. And my cat Opie, he was like, something's up. And usually he doesn't get rocked by anything, like fireworks, you know, the hot rods with the engines backfiring. You know, he gets a little bit, but he's like, you saw him. He's kind of like but he was like looking around like, what the hell happened? Look at this picture. I'm like, holy crap. What the hell was going on? But he still was okay. But he was just like, yeah, but that it was enough to get you old. And then I'm like writing on Facebook, holy crap, there was just an earthquake.
Yeah, you were kind of live texting it to me. I'm sitting at my desk at work.
Oh, right. Like, yeah, that's right. I was like, yeah, well, I had to tell somebody.
And I was telling you all about the U.S. Geological Survey. Go to the site and post your observations.
Yeah, there was some good stuff. I did post my observations. And I was watching the rings sort of the concentric rings of reports sort of move out further and further and seeing how far it went. But yeah, that was crazy. That was really crazy.
They filled it from Philly to the Great Lakes, apparently. Like it was shallow.
I saw there was a few reports down in the south too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. There was like very few, but there was like little pinpricks of someplace down in the Carolinas too. So,
wow.
I guess it's just the way the East Coast is designed and stuff like that for the
it's all one piece.
Anyway,
yeah,
yeah, that was enough to wake you up, and it's just you know. Anyway, but then we had our, you know, everybody was listening to this probably, you know, obviously we had the eclipse. We were scheduled to have clouds on Monday. And actually it wasn't too bad. It was actually not so bad, except the clouds finally kicked in after I think we had probably another 20 or 30 minutes of the moon passing. But I ended up, the first time I've ever photographed an eclipse, because I never would been ready for it, and this was everybody's making a big stink about it. So I bought the filter ahead of time and put it on my 100 to 600 Fuji, and I had a 1.4 teleconverter on it, so it's about the equivalent on a full frame of about 1200, I think, 1200 millimeters.
Cool.
Pretty nice. and I had it set up on the roof. We got let up on our roof, which a few people in the building. And we're allowed to go up. Well, we're all allowed to go up. We're not allowed to go up, but the super opened it up and we went up there.
Yeah.
And I had set up my, I was shooting with the Fuji X-H2, so trying to get the most amount of megapixels. And I just put that filter on. It was perfect. It was like a 16 or 18 stop ND.
Mm-hmm.
And it was absolutely perfect. And I had the little bent out screen set up.
Mm-hmm.
And as people were coming up to the roof, I was saying, hey, come here, before we put your glasses on, take a look, because this way they could see it, what it looks like close up.
Yeah.
And then when they get closer, I'm like, they're like, wow. I'm like, okay, look, just touch. I go, touch the screen. I'm like, what? I go, touch the screen. And I had the camera set up for touching the screen to trigger the shutter.
The shutter, yeah.
So they would tap it and you hear the shutter sound. I'm like, you just took a picture. They're like, oh, really? So it was very exciting. So yeah, it was, I was kind of blown away. We only had about, I think we were 90% here.
Yeah.
That's
enough. Which, I mean, the sequence that you showed me or you sent to me is pretty cool.
Yeah. I've never done that before. And I was like, okay, well, how am I going to display these? And so, yeah, I think I did a display of like 10 different, I can't even talk. 10
phases.
Different phases. Thank you. Phases. Ah, that's the word. 10 different phases of the moon. But what was fun is that as I was doing it in Photoshop, I was dragging in the layers and then setting up the blending mode for screen so that they would show through, the black would sort of become transparent. And as I'm dragging in all the layers, I ended up, I think I had like 15 layers and I actually cut them down, but as I put all the 15 layers, I dragged them all on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it made this sort of abstract kind of, did I show you that picture? I'll put it in the show notes. It's sort of like a bunch of the eclipse phases all sort of
one like
montage on top of each
time,
other.
One to the
no,
next.
No, no,
oh,
like
no.
All,
the one
all
that's
sandwiched
the geometric,
together, the sandwiched.
The shape, yeah.
Yeah, and I looked at, I had just dragged them in like that, and I was looking, and I was like, that's actually kind of cool. And I didn't arrange them. I had just dragged them in because I was making the Photoshop document. Dragged them, looked at the picture and said, oh. And so I just did save as, I think, geez, I hope I saved that document, but I definitely did save as, you know, now I'm thinking I might not have saved the document. Oh boy. But at least I got the shot.
What did you send me?
Anyway,
what did you just send?
Well, no, I sent it to you, but like that was the document that I was making the sequence pictures that I did in a diagonal.
Right.
But initially I had to drag in all the layers.
Oh, I see.
So, okay. So as I dragged in all the layers and before I resized them, I made this sort of abstract, and that was accidental, and I really liked that. And I put it up on Facebook, and a friend of mine who's a meteorologist on a news channel, and he's like, I think it's News 12, but he's now in New Jersey. He texted me and he said, I love this picture. I want to have it on my wall. So now I'm thinking I better have the high-res version.
To look at what you sent me and then recreate it. I don't know what else you're gonna have to do.
I am really hoping I have that someplace. Well, at least I have a high-res JPEG. I'm pretty sure I have a high-res JPEG. Anyway, I thought that was a nice. Actually, I liked it because it was a different way to look at the eclipse. It was just this abstract kind of jumble of phases together. So anyway, sorry, I'm going on about this thing too long. But it was quite enjoyable. Now I have got this filter that I have no use for. Although I could point it at the sun. Yeah. I tested it up with just taking a shot
at 1,200 millimeters pointing gear at the sun.
Yeah.
Great. Risk your sensor, risk your eyesight. It's all good.
Well, it's either going to work or it's not going to work.
Or it's not going to work. Exactly.
It worked. Yeah, it worked.
That's
although
great.
I haven't. Hopefully it didn't damage the sun. I can't imagine it would damage the sensor. No. I mean, it's a lot of stops.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's good.
Yeah. So that was an experience. And you said, unfortunately, you had some clouds. So
we had cloud and we were maybe 35%. So I don't know. Oh. We wouldn't really have noticed, I don't think, where I was. I just stayed at my desk and looked at webcams. And I was like, okay, that's fine. I can keep working. So... Yeah, we had one here a few years ago that was sort of in this 70-80%.
Well, you get the aurora down there, too. So you get all
the aurora.
And you get the galaxies that you can look up at night and see. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that reminds me. I mean, you've kind of inspired me to maybe get back into some more serious astro instead of just what I've, fell into. Or spur of the moment, go out and... set up. So maybe I'll be a little bit more, particularly now with the last few years, we've had aurora at all times of the year.
Really?
And if there is, remember once when, it's kind of coincidental when they were shooting that movie or the miniseries, The Last of Us here downtown or whatever. And the crew apparently, cause I had a friend on the crew, they're going up and down the highway here and they were driving to Edmonton. It's about 3 hours north of here. And it was in May, I want to say. And there was spectacular aurora and I guess the crew stopped and the stars, or whatever. Then the stars of the show went out to watch the stars and the aurora just by the side of the highway because it was so spectacular. And that was in May. And I have a specific memory of hearing that story. So we're coming up on, if we have, there's a lot of sunspot activity. And I see there were some sunspots on your pictures there.
Yeah, it was cool. It was fun to see other people's pictures because other people were posting their test pictures of that too. And I was like, oh, they've got the same spots.
Obviously. Well, it's the same.
And then I know, but it was like, that was the thing about the eclipse or even this kind of event is how it brought everybody together.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was this giant kind of gathering and everybody was stopping and looking at the same thing. And so like when I see that someone else in another part of the country is photographing the sun and they've got the same spots on it, it just felt like, I know, you could do the same thing with the moon, right?
Yeah.
But there was something connective about that experience that we're all seeing the same thing and we're all looking up and so seeing somebody else who's got the same spots on the sun, like it just took me. I don't photograph the sun that often. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do sunrises, but pointing the camera straight up at the sun and seeing it as a star and as ball and whatnot and seeing that someone else has got sort of the exact same framing of it. And I was like, yeah, we're looking at the same thing at the same time. And anyway, it was kind of cool. But yeah, sunspots, I had a friend who, when I worked at the image bank, submitted shots of sunset, and I think he was shooting Kodachrome or something. And I'm looking at them because I have to loop the pictures, and I think he was using a really long lens. I mean, obviously it was a long lens, but I'm looking at this picture of the sunset, and I'm like, what is this thing on the sun? And I thought it was some problem with the film. And of course, as I started going through all the similar shots, it was in the same spot.
Mm.
And I was looking at it and I was like, holy crap, he photographed sunspots. And it was with Kodachrome film, so it was really nicely, it wasn't like overexposing because it was sunset. It was going through all the layers of the atmosphere, so you could really, but it was a big one.
Mm.
It was bigger than the one that I photographed. And I called him up and I said, you know, hey, Mark, you know, you got pictures of this. You got pictures of the sunspots. And he's like, really? I'm like, yeah. He's like, he couldn't see it while he was photographing. So anyway, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, the next one is in the States in 2044. And, well, I feel like I got it. You know, I didn't travel to totality. And I actually would have been kind of bummed out if I went upstate New York and it was cloudy there, you know. Yeah. And, you know. So 90% was here. I'm 90% happy, right? And
there was mixed 10%. Reviews at Niagara Falls on the Canadian side. There was the news media was out there, and it was cloudy for most of the day. People were coming from all over the world.
Yeah.
And, so it was kind of hit or miss. But.
Yeah. Well, I have no complaints whatsoever. And even the clouds kicked in at the end, and I was like, you know what? I got enough. I got the last shot that looked like a, I don't know, just was symmetrical nicely, and I was like, yep, I'm happy. That was,
good. I'm glad, man. It's cool to do stuff like that.
Yeah, and it was just, and sorry, the other thing. A couple
and
more
another
things.
Thing.
And another thing, you know, you know, it's so different to look at a camera screen, right? You're looking at the camera screen and you're seeing it and it looks like a little television, but then I would put the glasses on and look up, and that was a totally different experience. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just something else to see it in reality than as opposed to looking at it in a camera. So I'm glad I brought glasses and was able, you know, I stopped every now and then. I made sure I looked up to actually experience the event with my eyes and not just through the camera screen. Because as I've probably mentioned here a zillion times before, as so many times in my life, I've gone to and experienced some location or place through the viewfinder of my camera. And not the effect itself. Also, I did take, I don't know if you saw, I can't remember if I posted it, I did take like 5 Polaroids.
Yes, of the people gathered, including yourself.
Yeah, including myself. And again, it was because I wanted to have the artifact of the day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these shots, I've got, I think I get 5 of them. One of them was photographed by my neighbor, but me and Ed, who you met, my neighbor Ed. Hello, Ed. You're probably listening to this. I don't know.
Hi, Ed.
you know, I have to put the date on these things, but I wanted the actual artifact of the day. So these pictures were taken on apocalypse eclipse.
Wow, what's on your brain, buddy?
No, there's a meme that was going around. It shows a sign that says it's not the apocalypse, it's the eclipse. Calm down, or something like that. Okay. We have a show, I think.
We do.
we can end right now. No.
Yeah.
So when we were talking about what to talk about tonight, I wanted to have both of us introduce some perhaps new photographers that
new to
maybe
us.
Not new.
Yeah.
New to us. Well, you know, just discovering.
Yeah.
And so we have a couple of photographers to go, and I thought, you know, we could talk about them.
Sure.
Little mini deep dives, as it were.
Yeah.
And just introduce the world to these people, especially because I, you know, for the photographer I'm going to talk about, I'm embarrassed that I never knew about her until recently. So, and then the photographer you're about to talk about,
I
never heard about
a
either.
A couple of months ago, yeah.
Yeah. So why don't you start with who you've got your, it's like we've done, it's like we're doing book reports.
We're doing the book reports.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, So discovery is one of my favorite parts of this hobby of collecting photo books, as you see. And in this case, I discovered this gentleman through Ted Forbes. He does his mail day videos on YouTube, and he shows books from different people of different skill levels and so on. And he showed
and these
this,
are books that sorry these are books that people sent
that people
in to
send
him, right?
in to him yeah and so
yeah,
he,
yeah.
he's just kind of you know gets all these free books. I mean, good for him. I kind of wish I was people would just send me books. That'd be good. Actually, that's not people have sent us books. I should just shut my mouth.
Yeah.
But so the gentleman we're talking about is a younger German photographer called Holger Nitschke. Forgive me, Holger, if you're listening. He's essentially a fashion photographer, and he specializes in film. He shoots film, black and white negatives for the most part. He has done some color work, but I think most of the work that I've seen of his are in black and white. So during and I had the book that Ted showed and that I have since purchased. It's called Some Squares, and what it is the whole upshot of the book was his discovery during the pandemic of the Rolleiflex, twin lens reflex.
It was that recently.
Yeah. Huh. And so he had all the different cameras, and he shot 35 millimeter, and I think he's done digital as well. But he discovered and really dug in shooting with this twin lens reflex. And so the work that he does, that he creates, it's fashion. So we're talking about young female models for the most part. On the fashion side, he's also a bit of a celebrity photographer. So not being German, I don't recognize the celebrities that he's shot, but that's just my problem. And so, you know,
yes.
So he his images have that wonderful twin lens kind of throwback feel to them. And at the same time, they have a modern sensibility. The models are wearing modern clothes, sometimes experimental clothes. They're posed sometimes in experimental ways. I think it's some of the pictures are tongue in cheek because, you know, the poor girl is really uncomfortable the way she's standing all twisted and contorted and sort of looking deadpan into the camera, like, take this picture. So there's some humor in there. It's pretty subtle, but I really like kind of the softness of his work. It's the model in their environment. It could be in a muddy field. It could be in the bush somewhere. It could be in an old home. And he just provides these wonderful, I would say, like, shallow depth of field for the most part, just so that they have that kind of medium format feel about them. And I saw that Ted Forbes featured the book. I bought it, and I'm very happy with it. In fact, I sent an email to him thanking him for the book. And when the book arrived, it was during some really cold weather we were having here. And I said, in the middle of this cold Canadian prairie winter, your book is like a breath of spring air, you know? So, and that's what it felt like, because it was like lovely, kind of moody, romantic, but not in a sappy way. Just very, engaging and relaxing experience to go through of it. It's not really kind of in your face. It's very soft and has a wonderful soft aesthetic. I like the way he's processed his images as well. There's good tones. The book is lovely.
Did he send the book to Ted?
Yes, he sent the book to Ted.
Oh, he did. Yeah. Okay, so he watches Ted as well. Okay. Yeah. Yeah,
I think a lot of us will watch Ted.
Yeah, no, I get that. But, like, you know, sometimes I don't think necessarily commercial photographers in other countries are watching him. But that's kind of cool that he sent the book to him. You sent me, what's his first name again?
Holger, H-O-L-G-E-R.
You sent me his website, and I looked through it. And it's funny, we haven't talked a lot about fashion photographers on the show, except maybe
Avedon.
I mean, we talked about Avedon.
Yeah,
you know, Irving Penn a little bit, but not really, you know, so much as fashion. And I keep forgetting how much I do like certain types of fashion photography.
Mm-hmm.
And his really harkens back to sort of an old style that you know, feels kind of like the kind of photography I might have seen when I was growing up too. You know, it was because he's shooting on film and it's very grainy, and you know, aesthetic is different, but, you know, from the models, because they're modern looking and whatnot, but there's something in the feel of the images that on his website, which I dig his website too, because it is so simple.
Yeah.
You know, we'll put the link in the show notes, but you literally, it's just like a list of pictures straight up and down, you know, there's no dissolve slideshows or anything like that. He's almost presenting his images as if they were a strip of film that you're hanging, that's hung up drying, and you're looking down this sort of line of, you know, 2 1/4, not all of them are 2 1/4, but you know, again, this line of images. And so it's a nice presentation as well. It has a, you know, he's younger than us, but it's got a feel of the kind of photography that I grew up with, or at least that I was interested in. And I keep forgetting how much I like fashion work. So when you showed me his website, I was like, this is really nice to look at. Mm-hmm. It was just pleasing. And so I could see having a book of his work where it's, you know, not every fashion photographer is worth looking at pictures in a book format, but his have an extra feel to it.
Yeah. And it's not racy. It's not in your face. It's just very gentle, soft, just wonderful. It's very unique. I think his work's very unique.
Yeah. And in the website, there's a link to a video, which I also put in the show notes. So YouTube, so it's almost like a promo video in a way for him. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little slickly made, but it does show him going out and in the field and photographing a model. And then one of those pictures is actually in his portfolio. This woman in sort of like this, what looks like, I don't want to say, you know, flat sort of landscape. And, you know, he's photographing black and white. And what's really interesting about that picture is how he does a full frame. So you see the black edges of the frame. Mm-hmm. And then there's this horizontal black frame where the horizon was sort of cutting through it of that picture. But it was nice to see how he worked with the model. And, you know, there's all this pre-prep and getting her dressed and finding the right clothing. But like when he's out there in the field with her, at least it was for this documentary, this little video. Mm-hmm. It's just him and the model, right? Yeah. There's no assistance. There's no lights. It's like this interaction between him and his subject and the background, you know, and that felt very pure. Like it was a nice.
There's no tension in, like, you think of, yeah, you know, being on a fashion show catwalk where there's all this, you know, this hubbub and racket and music and all that kind of stuff. One thing I thought was interesting in the video was he was talking about using the twin lens. He can't make direct eye contact with the model, and so the interaction is not between him and the model. It's between the model and the camera. He says it's like a brick in between him and the model. And, you know, in that way, he prefers that because he wants it to have a space for interpretation for the viewer. It's great because that's exactly, you know, that's kind of the feeling I get. It's sort of like something going on here. Like she is being photographed, but she's not, you know, the model is not having, you know, staring straight into the lens necessarily. It's just sort of, you're capturing her in that moment.
And she's probably not, the subject is not also responding to any kind of, you know, direct facial expression from a photographer. So there's no interaction, right? Mm-hmm. You know, her often a lot of the faces in his pictures, the models, the expression is very ambiguous.
Yeah.
So it has that interpretation. But so saying that, I'm thinking about, like we were just talking about Avedon, and after reading his biography and how he talked about going from the 2.25 to the large format camera because of that very interaction. Like he wanted to look at their faces.
Mm-hmm.
And he couldn't, because of the 2.25, he was always looking down and wasn't interacting. And it's interesting to have, you know, they're both really good photographers approaching similar kinds of subjects in space and time with different kinds of ideas of how to produce a photograph of a subject using, you know, dealing with the equipment and the interaction between the photographer and the subject. So it's like almost like, you know, neither one is better or worse, right? They're both really good, and look at the images that they're producing.
Mm-hmm.
This guy is doing it in a way on purpose. Like this is what he wants to do. He wants to have that ambiguity between himself and the viewer and the model, so that they can, right, you know, you can interpret it yourself. So yeah. Is the book mostly is it's all the fashion stuff?
I mean, yep, it's all fashion.
No other things. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't see much on his website of other subjects. So he really just focuses on the one thing.
There's some pictures of trees here, just sort of, should cut along while they're going, while they're walking to wherever their location is. It's just to add a bit of mood, but 99% of the images in the book, it's called Some Squares, are the models. And it's a wonderful surprise. I'm very happy. Very happy to have this.
I mean,
book.
You haven't talked much about fashion photography either to me. So no. That's why I'm kind of like when we were talking about doing this episode, and you sent me the link to this guy, I was surprised. I was like, it didn't, you know, wasn't the kind of pictures that I've heard you talk about that much. I mean,
that's true. Maybe I've
correct
maybe
me if I'm
just
wrong.
Keeping
I
it
could
a
be
secret,
wrong.
But. Yeah, and I really followed the supermodel era of, you know, Peter Lindbergh and Francesco Scavullo and Sante D'Orazio, all these guys that were shooting fashion and in the 80s and 90s. And Herb Ritz, like these were the guys that they had kind of dream jobs. It's not just because they were shooting pretty girls. There was a kind of a, I don't know, a kind of swagger that these guys had shooting this work. And they're busy all the time. I like the idea of that too. And there was a part of
me.
But
those guys I can see you talking to me about. Like, yeah, no, those are all the, you know, they're the ones that are up there. We know about them. And
yeah,
this guy was sort of off the radar, but you said you found him on Ted Forbes. But again,
he's a younger guy, so he would have just come up in the last 10, 15 years, right?
And he's just saying during the pandemic, he's finding the medium format just recently. So, yeah. I mean, he's been shooting film for a while, obviously.
Yeah.
Well,
in the video, they show him in his darkroom in his home. And that was, nostalgia right there, watching that sequence of him with the big Patterson. And he had a big Patterson tank, too, with the deep one, which I had borrowed. I never had one myself. So when I had my...
I didn't like the plastic tanks. I hated those. But he was shooting medium format, so, you know.
Yeah.
Those are kind of easier than medium format.
I didn't mind the plastic reels and tanks because the Patterson reels were adjustable, so... And I was a starving kid.
Yeah, no, I never got used to the back and forth motion that you have to do to wrap the film up. Because I learned on steel reels. So even medium format, although, of course, with steel reel, here we go. There's two old guys.
It's the darkroom equivalent of driving a stick. Yeah.
Yeah, but the steel reels, if you didn't do it right, you end up crinkling the edges.
Or the emulsion would stick together. I had that happen.
I never had the emulsion stick together. I will say that for sure. I was very good at
this. My 10th grade accident, that one.
That's a bummer. Yeah. But, and you know, I'd see other people do it, but I learned from real photographers. Like I was like, you know, I got this and I could do it in the dark. But the Patterson reel. Anyway, to go back to his video, which I'll post in the show notes. One of the things that was great in that darkroom is when he was hanging up the film to dry, and then he took his fingers slid them down the fingers. I was like, I used to do that too.
And it's dripping
after the photo flow.
And
is
you
on,
make
yeah.
sure your fingers don't have any crud on them, and you wipe them. If I had the I had the Patterson squeegee too, but I was afraid.
No,
that would scratch.
Yeah, I didn't like that idea because if you use your fingers, there wasn't usually nothing stuck to your fingers, right? Yeah. And there was soft. Yeah. And so I was doing it mostly with 35 millimeter film, not with medium format because I didn't really shoot that. But it was the same thing. So watching that video of him doing that for you in the bathroom darkroom kind of thing, I didn't have a bathroom darkroom.
Right.
But there was the things that he was doing, like pulling up the paper, you know, and... You know, even the red light, and there was something about, like, it was just something about the way they filmed that darkroom scene. Mm-hmm. Not a big deal, but it, like, in relationship to the kind of photography he's doing, yes, it was nice. It was a nice flashback to the things that I used to do. And again, like, I have a little nostalgia for the darkroom. I mean, there's aspects of the darkroom I like. I was never.
I could smell it.
Well, yeah, I could smell it too. Yeah, yeah. I used to have bad reactions to, to something with my hands, because I never wore gloves when I was in the darkroom. I wouldn't use tongs all the time, but occasionally I have this bad reaction where my skin would start to peel off on my hands.
Oh, I never had.
It was
that
really
problem.
Weird. Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, but that whole like there was aspects of the dark room that I liked, the solitude, the picking of the paper, there was just a bunch of things that they were doing in that. And then especially when he was drawing the film and he did that, but he did that with the fingers.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's great. Oh, and by the way, photo flow, someone was talking about photo flow in relationship to, inks with fountain pens as a lubricant.
Okay. For our listener, photo flow is like it's a wedding agent. It's like a detergent without soap. It's just suds,
right,
and nothing sticks to it. And it helps the film, breaks the surface tension on the film, so it dries uniformly and doesn't dry with spots.
What you used to do was you used to put like a teeny tiny drop in the film had it was in a tank of water,
mm-hmm,
like and you would just like put like one or two drops in, like, and it would just flood it over, and then you take the film out. I think it was after you washed it.
I would agitate it, go up and down in the
You wouldn't do it too much, because otherwise you get bubbles.
Yeah.
And then you'd hang it up, and then you'd have to sort of, you know, you could use a squeegee, or, you know, some of us used our fingers, and we just dragged our fingers down the film very, you know, nicely, and that would help sort of smooth it out. And anyway, so he did that. That was great. It was great to see that. So anyway,
Holger Nitschke.
Anything else about this guy?
No, I think we'll just leave our listeners to discover. I think if you like quiet fashion photography, he's one of the guys. And
I would agree.
I'm happy with my interactions with him. He replied to me, and which was kind of nice. He sent me a postcard in with my book too of one of his fashion pictures, and the personal touch, man. It's very cool.
That's cool.
I'm glad to know of him and to interact with him. So
yeah, all right.
Yeah.
So go check his work out. If you like fashion work, I think you'll like his stuff. Even if you don't, I think there's something very appealing to it. And the last thing I'll say is I didn't get the sense that he was using film to be like
pretentious,
trendy, or something like that.
Exactly.
No. I really get the feeling that the film was part of what he needed to do. You know, and so I appreciated that. I mean, that really came off in the video as well. And because I always get the sense, not always, but I get a lot of sense that people are doing film just because of a whole bunch of other reasons, and mm-hmm, not for what film is really about, which I'm not sure what it really is about, but I can't quite put those into words yet. Anyway, thanks for introducing me to him.
I'm happy to do it. Let's switch over to you, my friend. Who's your discovered?
Okay, so
artist?
I have a little backstory. Maybe I follow a bunch of photography groups on Facebook, and you know the way the Facebook feed works, it just feeds you stuff here and there. And of course, I'm finding a lot of photographers who I've never heard of before. And to my embarrassment, but I don't know what you don't know. I don't know what I don't know, and I'm actually kind of happy that I get to discover new people, even people who I probably was growing up with that I didn't know about. And so somewhere along the line, I'm looking through these, through my Facebook feed, and these pictures pop up of these empty rooms and you know, windows open with bed and shades or curtains blowing. And I was like, whose is this? And I looked up the name, and it was a woman named Ava Rubinstein. Her name is spelled E-V-A, but I think it's pronounced Ava Rubinstein.
Okay.
And I had never heard of her before. And she's still with us, photographer. She's new to me, so I don't really have her history. So I'm just going to read the back of her book, which doesn't have a name other than her name. So I'm just going to give you the history. I'm cheating this way, but I think it's clear. Born in Buenos Aires of Polish parents, Ava Rubinstein spent her early childhood in Paris, where at the age of 5, she began her training as a dancer. She came to the United States at the outbreak of World War II. After studying at the theater department of UCLA, she danced and acted in New York and appeared in the original company of The Diary of Anne Frank. Now divorced, now this book was in the early 70s, so this is coming right. Now divorced, she is the mother of three children. Eva Rubinstein began photographing in 1967, receiving initial instruction and continuing encouragement from Sean Kernan. Later study included workshops with Lisette Modell, Jim Hughes, Ken Heyman, and the late Dion Arbus. Her editorial, illustrative, and portrait photographs have appeared in major publications throughout the world. This monograph presents a selection of her personal work, which is receiving growing recognition through exhibits and the reproduction of portfolios in photographic publications. This book was produced in 1974. So we're talking like 50.
Yep.
Sorry.
Say it out loud. It's the truth.
Yeah, I know. That's just weird. You and me on the same thing. I'm looking at 74. I was 10 years old when this book came out. And okay, so this book is 50 years old. It's in great shape for 50 years old. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right, now I'm depressed. I never heard of her before, and we were talking, I think I mentioned her in the in our Unusual Collective.
Yeah.
And our friend Keith Goldstein, he knew about her. He knows a lot of photographers. Both you guys should be talking about stuff because you guys know all these photographers that I don't know. He actually said that he has this book or used to have it on his bedside. He'd look at it now and then. And so I'm happy that I'm learning about her and that I just got this book in the mail today. So it was kind of cool to get it just as we're going to talk about her. But what drew me to her photograph is really the photographs that drew me. And then I was like, who is she?
Mm-hmm.
And these photographs of these empty rooms and like, she does other things. She had portraits and she does news as well. But the pictures that I saw were these sort of empty spaces. Right. But very, very kind of, there was something about the way she was photographing these spaces that very much pulls me into them. And, like there's a kind of a lingering presence that she's capturing in these photographs. It's black and white. Obviously it's not digital and she's shooting on film. But there was something I've been resonating a lot with these photographs of empty areas, spaces and stuff like that. And we were talking with, we haven't done a show about liminal spaces yet, right?
No.
It was something we were talking about with our brother in light, Dave Swiduk, which we haven't gotten into.
In between this, where people move.
The spaces in between, yeah. These are not liminal spaces. I don't think these are sort of like the before or after the liminal space, but there's something that's drawing them in. But anyway, I've been attracted to this type of image. And I was like, where have I seen these before? Where have I seen something that's similar? And it occurred to me that a while back I found a Danish painter. In a strange way, I found this Danish painter. His name is Wilhelm Hammershøi. And he was born in 1864, and he's Danish. And he produced these paintings of these sort of empty spaces, not necessarily always empty. I mean, often there was actually a figure in the space. It's usually his wife. And the quick story was I found his imagery through a poem that he wrote about grief. Somewhere along, because I've been collecting poems about grief. It's just, it's one of the ways I'm processing my own grief about Elizabeth dying. And I've been finding a lot of wonderful, some great solace in what people are writing about grief. And he wrote something. It wasn't a poem. It was just a paragraph about, sorry, I've got, you hear that?
Yeah. Skaters? What is that?
I don't even get it. Don't get me started. Anyway, it was an interesting little paragraph about dealing with grief and people. And I was like, who is this guy? And I looked up his name and then I saw his paintings from the late 1800s into early 1900s. in these empty spaces. Sometimes they were empty. Often the image was vertical of a room with open windows and sometimes with doors that led down like multiple rooms. Oops. Sorry. I'm holding a fountain pen and it's just started to leak all over me.
Oops.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, I better not get it on my shirt. Anyway, I just wanted to make sure that, sorry, this is happening in real time. Just making sure I'm playing with this pen. Let's take it out of play here. All right. Sorry. But now look at my hands.
Working yeah. man's hand. You've been anyway, in the print shop this day, today.
Yeah, I know. I just don't want to touch my shirt with it. Sorry. This is happening all live. I'm not cutting this out. Anyway, so his images will have like this figure in it, which is often his wife, in an empty room with an empty table, these open doors leading someplace, or sometimes there's nobody in the space. And I was saying these Rubinstein pictures are very similar. They have that same kind of feel. Mm. And there was something that I was resonating with about these empty spaces in the sense of, you know, my own situation with empty space, right? Where there was once somebody here and now there's nobody, but the space still is there. And that's kind of what I was seeing in her images, at least of these spaces that she was photographing. So it really caught my eye. And, you know, I was kind of surprised that I've never heard of her before. And, you know, she's in the time period of like when I'm growing up and learning about photography. And even there's a couple of YouTube videos of her talking at a museum in Kalamazoo. And I didn't watch it yet, but you know, I know she's still alive and she still talks about her photography. It was really nice. But
she was a contemporary of Ralph Gibson and Mary Ellen Mark, right? They sort of hung together for right. a while or
right. I don't know about Mary Ellen Mark, but I know she's got a photograph of Ralph Gibson.
Okay.
Somewhere. I've seen it and it's you know, he's looking nice. But again, the circles that she's around, you know, I didn't know that she had worked with Sean Kernan, and Sean Kernan actually wrote the intro to the book. And I've taken a couple of classes with Sean Kernan, and I really like his work. Mm. So I can see that, you know, how, you know, they would connect. But it's so interesting when this world is so small, photographers, you know, sort of all know each other yeah. because of these things. But anyway, it's just this, you know, her portraits are, I like them. Her nudes, there's some interesting nudes that she's done, and she's probably got a few more pictures that I haven't seen yet because I haven't done full research on them. But it's this open, it's these empty spaces, and you know, putting her work next to Hammershoy's work together, I could see that they're probably kindred spirits in some way. Although the story about Hammershoy is really interesting, of the kind of person he was. I have a feeling they're a different kind of people, personality wise, but certainly kindred spirits in the ways of looking at spaces and ambiguity in these spaces. And the thing I liked about Rubinstein's work is those spaces really have a feel of, I don't know, like human beings were just there.
I was about to ask you, what is it with you and these open spaces and curtains blown in and that sort of thing, and light streaming in through windows? I mean, I'm teasing a bit, but
no, I know.
What are you getting? How does it affect you?
Well, first of all, it's something that I don't see that often. Mm-hmm. I mean, living in New York in my apartment, you know, these are the kind of thing. Well, Hammershoy's images are of apartments in Copenhagen, so. But even still, like, you know, I didn't grow up with curtains and you know, there's something that is that I have a longing to see and that I don't see ordinarily. Okay. So there's a bit of that. There's a bit of like nostalgia in the sense of like, I feel like I've seen this stuff before, but I just don't know where. Mm. Maybe it's just imagination, or it's how I picture what a home should be like. You know, void of actually both. What's interesting with both of their images is a lot of their spaces have nothing in them. Like there's very little clutter. There's, you know, there might be a couple of things in the room, like a vase or a bed or something like that, but there's often nothing in the room. And, you know, growing up the way I did with, and even the way I'm living now with a lot of stuff, visual clutter in my vision. And so I look at pictures and paintings like from those two, and it, there's sort of a fantasy of like, you know, visual, you know, something missing, that, you know, clutter. I hate to say clutter. It's not the right word. It sounds bad. Just something for my eyes to rest, right? There's very few elements in the in these images, and they say a lot. That's the thing. It's like there's so much that's said from so little. So I think there's some fantasy part of it that I wish that I could have more of. Like, you know, I look around and I would love to take a picture of like these, this photographer and painter, not pictures, although his paintings are very photographic. I would love to do that. That's the kind of thing that I like to do. And I don't, I can't, I'm not able to do, I can't just look around my house and like, I won't have curtains and soft things. And there's just something very relaxing about it. I don't know. I'm not being very articulate.
Oh, interesting. You know what? It's reminding me of the pictures of the old farmhouse from I went a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah,
Where I used to live. And as you're saying this, I'm thinking about that experience of time travel, a kind of nostalgia, a kind of sadness. I don't get that from Rubenstein's work at all. But I'm just they're open, empty, void spaces where people used to live.
Your pictures or hers?
Yeah, mine.
I don't. Hers don't feel like there's a used to live there. There's like, someone was just there, or someone's about to be there. Like they're sort of the, I don't know. It's like the opposite of liminal spaces. It's like the other ends of liminal spaces. Mm-hmm. Like there's something in between. The things about the empty rooms are, they're almost like like a canvas, like they're like a canvas for memory and emotion.
Oh,
it's like
okay.
Cool. It's like,
well, that just hit me. Like, yeah, absolutely.
Oh yeah. Well, tell me what? How did it hit?
Well, no,
you?
It's kind of an insight, same as Nitschke's brick between the subject and the photographer. The interpretation. The viewer gets to interpret something because of that part of his process. And here, like you're talking about, like a poetic quality of the images that, you know, these open spaces are like, what did these walls hear? Can you hear the wind blowing? All that kind of stuff. Right. Like, what's the sensory thing going on with people in this space, even though there aren't people in this space? Like, I get it now.
And there's like there's also a timelessness to actually both Hammershoy's work and Rubenstein's work. There's I think the pictures are universal, timeless. Well, let's talk about her pictures instead of Hammershoy's. We can do a show on Hammershoy. It'd be interesting to talk about him, but that, like it's like a sense of, well, certainly there's a sense of love in her images. And, you know, I don't know if that it being, I don't mean this way, but like there's the feminine part of the photography is like, it seems to be very visible. And, you know, sometimes you see that in her kind of work or that kind of sensitivity in male, you know, photographers or artists as well. I like to think of, Christopher Nolan, some of his earlier work, when he would show sort of these flashbacks of a character, like in Memento or something like that. I'm trying to think of another movie. Memento, I think, was the one that had the most, but he had these sort of sensible. Oh, and Steven Soderbergh, too, has this kind of sensitivity to the past through flashbacks. And there's something about those kind of things that I'm attracted to that also to me resonate with Rubenstein's work. There's a continuity between them. Of course, you know, the other ones are moving images and hers are still, but there's something about her imagery that, you know, feels like it's moving to me. You know, the drapes are moving in the breeze, and I can imagine them continuing. Like I'm looking at the still frame, and I can just imagine, I can see these drapes still moving, or something else. Anyway, there's something so great about looking at such, I would say, simple imagery, very well crafted, that it's got a lot of depth to it. There's not a lot of stuff in it, but it brings up a lot of stuff. And so it does feel like more emotions and fantasy and concepts and stuff like that. So that's kind of what, and there's also a bit about of solitude too. There's like this lone part. It's not like it's a crowded space. It's very lonely. And again, I look at it, the part that I'm also resonating with is like, I'm looking around, not in my own space, and you know, the person who was there is not there now, you know? So I'm on the other side of this. Like I'm looking at, and this happens a lot, I look at spaces in my apartment where Elizabeth used to be, and she's not there anymore. And then that's what some of these images do to me. They like remind me of the person who was there. And so there's just a lot. And so it was a lot when I saw the pictures in my timeline. I was like, you know, wow, you know? And I would like to say that's the kind of photograph I would like to take, but I don't think it's up to me to take those. Like, that wouldn't be the thing I would want to do. It's not, I don't have that. I love looking at those pictures, though. I love spending time with her work, in this idea of having a photograph that allows for reflection and space and, you know, sort of a pause in the crazy world of my clutter and the New York City and looking at something like that. So I'm not making a lot of sense, but I'm just like trying to be like free flowing here a little bit. And you sort of knew of her as well. I mean, I was not, you said tangentially.
Sorry, well, I knew some of her portraiture, I think, is where I had seen in one of these photographers of the 20th century, you know, rundown of, you know, here's some representative examples of her work. So that's where I kind of drew the line. Oh, she was a contemporary of Arbus and Gibson and Mary Ellen Mark.
Yeah.
That's essentially all I knew about her. I didn't know about the spaces part because the volume that I was reading had more to do with pictures of people than it did about her personal work, you know.
Yeah. It's nice to see a photographer like her, to discover her, and she does different things. Like she's not just doing the spaces, but she has the nudes and the portraits as well. And so it's kind of really, it's cool to come across someone who can do something like that well in different aspects. And the other thing I wanted to say about the pictures, like, again, what she's got and what Hammershoy also does is an incredible, the silence in their imagery is loud. If that makes any sense whatsoever. The silence is the thunderous. I remember hearing that in a movie once. The silence is the thunderous. But I get the sense that the silence in their imagery is just like it screams at me in a good way, you know. And so I'm really happy to have found her work, and I'm really happy to have this book of hers, and to now, like, she's now part of the pantheon of stuff that I can
growing pantheon.
I can, yes, it is. And you know, I love that sense of discovery, just like you're with
Holger.
I'm not gonna say his name right.
Huh? I'll just say his first name, Holger.
Yeah. Holger, yeah, with you with Holger, it's just me with Ava. I hope it's Ava. It's like Ava. You know, me with her, and it's like, you know, I can still find people who are going to pull these kind of, you know, feelings and stuff from me, and just, you know, it's like I still have a lot to learn, and I love that because I still feel like I love learning about people. And then, yeah, she was in my past too, you know, and it's nice to know we sort of you know, I have a couple of degrees of separation from her. Not that I don't know Sean Kernan too much, but we are Facebook friends. That doesn't usually mean anything. But I did take a couple of classes with him. So I think we should do a deep dive on Sean Kernan. I would love to have him on the show. I don't know if he would actually if I can actually reach out to him. I know a couple of people who know him directly, but it'd be interesting to talk to him about her.
Yeah,
as well.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. So anyway, go check her out. I'll put all the links in the show notes. I'll try to drop some of her pictures in there too, so you can just see what I'm talking about. And I'll try to talk about, I'll put some of Hammershoy's images. I just put, I'll put a link actually to a documentary about him that was BBC with Michael Palin trying to follow Hammershoy. I did a search for Hammershoy on YouTube, and there's this BBC thing. Anyway, it's interesting because it'd be to look at his work and then look at her work as well to see what I'm talking about. So I'll put that in there. But yeah, that's it. I think we had a couple of good, yeah.
Wow. It was nice, a little bit change of pace.
Yeah, yeah, and I've been wanting to
do sort of semi-shallow deep dives.
Yeah, a couple of them. Yeah,
yeah.
And I'd like to do more of these. I mean, I've got a whole pile of pictures on my phone of like screenshots of photographers. I was like, "Ooh, who's this? Capture that. Who's this?" Yeah. I've even written about some of them in my photo journal. So it'd be great to like follow up on some of these people. But yeah, and cool. All right, well. Yeah, let's wrap this up before we get too tired and get people convert. All right, so where in the world can you be found?
Well, on Vero and X/Twitter, I can be found at WRosinPhoto. On Instagram, I'm Ward Rosin Fine Art. It's WARDROSIN Fine Art. Facebook, I'm Ward Rosin Photo. I have a website, which is rosin.ca. And our unofficial podcast sponsor, is Ornis Photo, ORNIS.photo, where I sell lenses and lens adapters for fun.
Lenses, seven artisans.
Yeah.
Seven artisans. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We gotta get some of those lenses out in the world. They're so much fun.
They are.
To play with.
Sales have picked up lately. I don't know. There's a spring thing going on.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah.
Got enough capital built up to
all right.
Do another order.
Well, come check out our unofficial sponsor and help unofficially sponsor our podcast with them. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So, and what about you, my friend? Where can we find you?
Where am I? I'm pretty much on let's see. Well, Vero and Flickr of AM Rosario at AM Rosario Instagram. At AM Rosario Photo. My website is amrosario.com. But if you want to find me on Facebook, I'm going to throw that in, facebook.com/Rosario Photo. So that's a place where I put a lot of my pictures. Our website is streetshots.photography. But we've had a lot of people sign up for our Substack newsletter recently. So because I want to say friend, he's not quite a friend yet, but the Barry and X Perello and the Candid Frame subscribed to us and recommended us. So very we've cool. gotten some subscribers lately. So go check our Street Shots Substack newsletter out at streetshots.substack.com. And if you want to leave a voicemail for us, speakpipe.com/streetshots. We've had some voicemails. That's kind of fun. And if you want to support us by buying me a coffee, you have to buy me a coffee to support us. You can go buymeacoffee.com/Antonio Rosario. So we've got people subscribing to the newsletter. I got to write another newsletter soon. I got to figure something out. So that's cool. It's great. I can get voices out there in the world. Yeah, so anyway,
it's nice to interact. And please, if you're thinking about it, please go ahead and do it.
Yes.
Fire us a DM or. Let it leave us a message on SpeakPipe. It's really
absolutely,
great to get that feedback from you.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's call it a night. I'm going to call it a night.
It's a night.
It's a night. Night. Thanks for hanging in with us for tonight. And we will see you in a couple of weeks. And Ward, have a good night. Thanks.
You too, my friend. Good night.
Good night.